Hi, this is Warwick Davis, and you're listening to the 5E Filibuster.
Welcome to another edition of the Friday Filibuster. We've got a smaller panel of experts, I guess, tonight, and that is we don't have Mike Rubino on staff because he is at a Penguins game, and hopefully that Penguins game turns out okay for him. So our thoughts and prayers are with you, Mike Rubino. So if there's anything you want to add to that, I'll let you go ahead with Eric Eschlager. Anything you want to add?
Oh, see, when you mentioned that we were a smaller panel, I thought you had noticed that I lost a few pounds.
Oh, well, you do. I wasn't sure. Mac had told me you might have had like a tapeworm or something, so I didn't really want to, you know, tread somewhere sensitive.
Well, you know, it's a bit kind of an indelicate way to put it. I mean, I had a friend who lived in my intestine,
yes,
and he helped me to realize my weight goals.
So it's like a little personal trainer.
Exactly. He's a personal trainer, and his name was actually, I didn't name him. I probably should have.
KP.
It's a little late for that now, but yeah, you know.
Well, you do. You look fabulous. You look fabulous.
Thanks. You know, I actually have no idea how I don't really know if I know how tapeworms work.
You know, that's a subject I'd never want to actually investigate ever.
I think the only thing I know about tapeworms is that they used to draw them out with cabbage, cooked cabbage. The smell of it, they'd starve the patient. This is way too much, but they'd starve the patient, and then they'd like get some cooked cabbage, and the tapeworm would actually crawl up. Out.
Yeah, awful. I've
Isn't
heard
that terrible.
Yeah, I've heard variations on that, like putting.
Oh boy,
that is like a horror movie to me. Awful.
That is that fact that the entire thing, one continuous shot.
Mac, do you remember the house episode where they found a tapeworm in some woman? It was like 10 feet long or something. You remember that?
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, that's
hard to get the tape. Yeah. See, I was just thinking it could be like an awesome MythBusters episode.
I can't. There's nothing. I don't want to know anything about tapeworms at all. And to me, the horror movie called Tapeworm, I think that would, you know, that would do it. That would do it for me. So.
You know, I'd still rather watch that than The Human Centipede.
Okay. Good point. all right, so obviously Eric and Mac are here with me, and we're going to kill some time before your – I mean, this is the weekend before Thanksgiving, and because we don't do any show prep, I have no idea if we can do a Thanksgiving show, so who knows? You know, who knows what will be happening? We might squeeze out some Thanksgiving. We did talk a little bit – I think we talked about this on air, right, guys, about doing our Firestorm special, right?
That's right.
We teased it, though we didn't announce that we were actually planning on doing that imminently.
Yes, well, it is imminent, so something to look forward to. But
It's in pre-production.
But yeah, Firestorm is we're targeting as the next movie we're going to do a fun filibuster joint impromptu commentary on. So you can look forward to that. That's kind of a tease for what's coming up.
You should have just stopped after a Friday filibuster joint.
Yeah,
you know. Spike Lee thing, yeah, exactly.
So anyway, I guess we'll just kind of go what's happening. So Eric, anything to report?
Let's see. It's been a little quiet, although let's see. I did catch one. See the beauty of Netflix instant streaming. You know,
yes.
giveth and taketh away.
Filibuster sponsored by Netflix.
Not yet, but yeah, I watched in pieces Killer Clowns from Outer Space.
Oh, yeah. I actually may have owned that at one point. I may own it still. I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's a weird little movie. I can't tell if it's good or not. It's certainly not long, so it's got that going for
yeah,
it.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, you know, kind of a bizarre movie. Fun. I think my favorite part, though, is almost a bit of throwaway dialogue where one of the characters near the end speculates that perhaps, you know, the clowns aren't really clowns. They just look like clowns, and that these aliens were the original alien astronauts who came to Earth, and that our perception of clowns is based on memories of them. For some reason, that strikes me as a compelling bit of, you know, retconned myth mythology they threw in at the end there, so.
Nice. They should have brought in Shatner just to deliver that one speech.
That would have been good. And it's a movie that you know, you kind of realize at the end that no matter, you know, who wins, we all lose.
Yes, yeah.
Because, right. You know, it's like they've basically, you know, taken the entire town, killed them, stuffed them in cotton candy, and they're flying them away in a spaceship. So the town is basically dead at this point. I mean, everyone, the police force is decimated. You know, all the kids at Makeout Point are all not making out anymore. And it's just, you know, and then the spaceship explodes, spoiler alert. And it's like, well, sure, you beat them, but, you know, at what cost?
A steep cost, my friend.
It is a steep cost. And I also, watching it, kind of wonder if the end of Batman Arkham Asylum was based on the end of that movie.
Wow. That's a bold claim.
It was a bold, you're familiar with the endings of both.
It's
been a while, I guess, probably for Killer Clowns from you.
Yeah, it's probably too long for Killer Clowns.
There's the sort of the final boss battle, if you will, is reminiscent of the final boss battle from Arkham Asylum.
Gotcha. Huh.
Yeah, I don't know. I wonder now if that was a little nod. Probably not. I think I'm reading way too much into this. Bring on Firestorm, that's what I say. Let's figure out how Firestorm was actually, you know, a nod to Super Mario Brothers or something. Sure, I can do it.
All right. Mac, how about you?
Let's see here. Not too much. Still enjoying all the shows that I enjoy. You know, Castle is going strong, enjoying that. And Ben 10 last Friday, they traveled into outer space and we saw the origin of the celestial sapiens.
That's good.
So that was a real mind-bender of an episode right there.
Right, nice.
And also I've been following Tower Prep on Cartoon Network, which is a really interesting kind of out there sort of show. You know, of all the pitches that are out there in Hollywood, I never would have guessed that The Prisoner for Kids would have made it to series, but that's pretty much what Tower Prep is. It's The Prisoner for Kids.
All right. Oh, someone greenlit it, so.
Yes. Yeah, so it's, you know, you've got this fancy prep school that's out in the middle of nowhere, but the kids there are basically prisoners who are there against their will. There's a giant wall around the school that they can't get out of, and they have no idea why they're there or what the teachers want from them. So our heroes decide they're going to play along for now while secretly investigating just what the heck is going on at Tower Prep. So it's interesting. It's got a lot of interesting people behind the scenes, including lots of former X-Files writers doing the writing for this one. So it's definitely caught my interest, and I'm looking forward to the next episode to seeing what's going to happen next. Which I couldn't say about, you know, The Event or No Ordinary Family. So
right. Did you – I can't remember. I know we've talked about this before. Did you test out The Event at any point?
I watched the first two episodes and then I bailed.
Okay, that's right.
The Event was not eventful.
Yeah, it sounds like the
probably
ratings
not the
have
first
dipped.
Person on the internet to use that slam.
It sounds like the ratings have dipped pretty fiercely on that. So
yeah, I don't doubt it. I mean, I can't really imagine, you know, 7 years from now everyone – gathering around their TVs for the final episode of The Event.
Yeah, it's a hard sell.
Did you say 7 years or 7 weeks?
Probably 7 weeks. I think that's more accurate. Yeah. For me, I think I've crossed into total fanboy threshold. Really enjoyed the third episode of The Walking Dead. And I think it's gotten better and better. And I don't know. Even though there wasn't as much zombie action in this third one, it kind of focused on the survivors and stuff, which I've always found compelling. I guess it's just to get that slice of the Stand, you know, that Stephen King feel, which I like. So I don't know. Did you guys see the third one?
Yeah, I agree that it was a step up from the second one. I have to say I was a little worried kind of partway through the episode when, minor spoilers, they decide to go back.
Right.
And the reason that they decide to go back kind of rubbed me the wrong way. Like, well, why didn't you just turn around like 5 minutes into your trip? Why did you have to come all the way here and then go all the way back and basically do the same thing you did last week? But I think they resolved it pretty well. And I guess I'm just a cold-hearted jerk, but I like the idea that they're going back for the guns more so than they're going back for that guy.
Well, actually, I forgot that from the pilot episode, remember the father and his son were going to meet up. With Rick.
Oh, yeah. That was good, too.
Yeah, that one, that added a little more. Yeah, I could see this happening. So if it was
definitely gave him the right motivation. Because otherwise, it's like, you know, you're going back for a stereotype, really?
Right. If it was for the guns or for the douchebag, that would have. But
that's a line from Godfather, isn't it?
I believe so.
Leave the guns. Take the douchebag.
I guess I just like Lenny James so much from Jericho. I just, you know, I don't want him to die at the hands of some fake. Well, that's it for us. Actually, we've been trying to play some catch up with movies that we didn't ever got a chance to see in the theaters. We saw How to Train Your Dragon a couple days ago.
How is that? Is that any good?
Yeah, pretty good. Pretty good. Not bad at all. Very, you know, entertaining. Really fun to watch. I mean, just a lot of eye candy, a lot of cool stuff. So, yeah, I really like that. Really like that a lot. And then we have Toy Story 3 here waiting for us. So I'm preparing to sink myself into toy emotional oblivion pretty soon here. So
stock up on tissues.
Yes, that's right.
Several boxes handy.
I don't know. I used them all up in How to Train Your Dragon. It was so sad. But yeah, so just going to try to steadily move through all those movies. Up next is probably Scott Pilgrim. We haven't even seen Iron Man 2 yet. That needs to be checked off the list. So quite the challenge ahead of us, but I think we're up to it. All right. Well, let's talk about what we've been working on for the site. Eric?
Well, this week it kind of ties into something we all did several weeks back now, but I'm reviewing Best Worst. I don't have it in front of me. Which was it? Best Worst
Best
Movie.
Worst Movie. What best Worst Movie. Best Movie, I wonder.
That's a good question. That's an ambush topic right there.
Titanic, I guess.
The worst best movie out there. Is it Citizen Kane or is it? Best worst movie. Yeah. But yes, yeah, is the documentary made by the now grown up child star from Troll 2, the movie that we all did a commentary for a while back, and it's really fascinating. I'm glad I watched it after we did our commentary because I think I would have felt too guilty making fun of the people in the movie the first time around.
Gotcha.
There's a bit of that. I think you kind of realize that, you know, we watch all these movies and, you know, not all of them are terribly good. And, you know, we only have to spend, you know, 90 minutes with these movies, but the people who are in them have to spend their entire lives kind of dealing with it. And so then this movie kind of, visits most of the major cast for the movie. Really follows the story of the guy who played the dad. His name is George Hardy. He's was a dentist and is a dentist again. And the director of this movie, the kid, Michael, I'm blanking on his last name, but I know he kind of comes in and kind of introduces George to the cult kind of fame that's out there waiting for him. And they go to all these like Troll 2 viewing parties, and you kind of see all these fans and kind of see the kind of a cool side of being a cult celebrity, of being in a terrible, terrible movie, especially one as bad as this. But then you have other cast members who really are not dealing with it very well. I mean, there's a daughter who basically is an actress and does not put it on her resume and kind of secretly wishes, you know, she'd never been in it. And,
sad.
It is sad. And then,
I don't know. I mean, any publicity is good publicity sometimes, you would think, you know?
I think so. But it's sort of the way she put it is, you know, she goes to these auditions and then the last question is, hey, were you in that movie Troll 2? And then she leaves knowing that she's not getting the part. Which is sad. But kind of even worse is the woman who played the mother. Her name is Margot Prey. And like she now like lives kind of in isolation, taking care of her mother, and you can really tell at one point she actually says, you know, her ideal scenario would be to go somewhere far away where no one knows her. Like that kind of, it's really kind of heartbreaking. So it's a fascinating look at the kind of the other kind of, not just the making of a movie, but
the silent victims.
Yeah. Even just the long-term effects of something like this. Cause, you know, most bad movies just kind of fade into obscurity. So you never really, you know, there's no reason to, think much about, you know, who was in it and what they did later, but Troll 2 has gotten this kind of huge cult following. So it's sort of worth it to see how these people do it. And then you spent a lot of time with the director of the movie, this Italian guy who is convinced that this was an important movie and it's great. And, you know, there's this really kind of, weirdly tense moments where he gets together with, you know, the other cast, and they're at a couple of viewing parties, And you know that he's really – you can see he's really impressed by it, that all these fans have come out to see it. And you get the sense that he really thinks that they're – that they – it's finally found an audience because, you know, the time – its time has come. But then he hears everyone laughing at it at places where there aren't supposed to be jokes. And he gets really, really riled up. At one point he's kind of yelling at the actors because they're kind of telling funny anecdotes and he's just trying to, you know – get everyone to see what a great it's a very cool documentary. I do wish that the guy who put it together inserted a bit more of himself into it. He kind of remains kind of silent behind the camera, but it's very cool. And I don't usually point this out, but it has really, really awesome cover art. If you check it out on Amazon or something, and it comes in this bright green DVD case, kind of reminiscent of an Xbox 360 game or something. So, you know, a lot of care and love has gone into it, so
right.
It's fun.
Nice. Mac?
Yeah, I am right now. I'm working my way through the new box set of the new Doctor Who, which is, I guess they're calling it the fifth season, but with the show with this much history, it gets kind of complicated. But this is the 11th Doctor, the brand new one, which is Matt Smith, and it's really good. I'm really enjoying it so far. You know, I'm behind.
So, do they explain like the different doctors? Do they die? Is that how it works?
Yeah, when he dies, he doesn't just fall over dead. His body regenerates into a new form.
So, is there always like an episode where the previous doctor and there's a transition episode?
Exactly.
Okay.
Those are the episodes that everyone really looks forward to because that's when the big change is.
Gotcha. Okay.
And they go from one to the next. We never saw a regeneration from the 8th to the 9th because of behind-the-scenes prep. And there was several years in between those two doctors. But for all the rest, we actually see them transform and regenerate. Hmm. And there's a bit of continuity in there which says that he can only regenerate where he has 13 regenerations, so he can only regenerate 12 times. And everyone's wondering, like, what's going to happen in the future? Are they going to stick to that and end the show? Or are they going to do some kind of crazy sci-fi thing so we can keep going. But as for now, this is number 11. And you know, behind the scenes, a writer that everyone likes, Stephen Moffat, he's taken over as the new showrunner. And so the whole thing's under his guidance. And the scripts they're very witty, lots of great, clever dialogue. But the plots are just crazy, over-the-top stuff. It's just, you know, this guy Moffat, he's a real idea man. And he's just pouring everything he can into the show. So got things like, you know, in the future, that the entire nation of England is on board one single spaceship flying around in space. And then we go back to World War II, where we've got the bad guys, the Daleks. We have a World War II era Dalek that's done up like a big, green tank. So it's kind of got that clunky World War II look. And the Weeping Angels, if you're familiar with them, they make a return visit. So, all kinds of stuff going on this season. I'm really enjoying it.
All right. Nice. I have no idea of any of that stuff you were talking about, by the way.
Nope. Dave, we need to get you watching Doctor Who. You need to embrace your inner Whovian.
Yeah. I'm not sure.
Doctor Who?
Oh.
And that was... I'm going to be quiet now. Go ahead.
Let's see. A few things working on, but I'd be remiss if I didn't jump right to the big release that I tackled, that is, of course, Silver Dream Racer.
Oh, you got that?
I did. Silver Dream Racer, starring Bo Bridges and David Essex. David Essex is a underachieving professional motorbike racer. Can't quite keep up with Bo Bridges' character, who's named Bruce McBride. He's like the stud of the circuit. It just always falls short, never wins, can never beat him. But then one day, I think his brother dies and leaves him the awesome Silver Dream racer bike. And he didn't seem too broken up about his brother dying, but it's pretty amped up bug in his motorcycle. So, and then just from that point on, this movie is just kind of your standard issue, you know, sports underdog movie. This guy, likable guy on the motorcycle, trying to best the douchebag alpha dog type and get the girl and win the race finally, you know. So it plays out pretty straightforward like that, kind of corny too. But, and big spoiler alert, it has got, there's an American ending and the original ending, right? An American ending, you know, big race, and, you know, our hero is on his bike, and he's crossing the finish line. Everyone's cheering, going crazy, and just in slow motion, he just has his arms out, welcoming the glory, and then fade to black with a great song. Original ending extends the scene just slightly and changes things just a bit, because as he's crossing the finish line, like, his axle blows out, and everyone stares in slow motion horror as he crashes on the wall. In graphic detail, the motorbike runs over his head. Everyone, his girlfriend is watching, mouth open. His best friend and mechanic watching in horror. Everyone is in horror. Slow motion shot again. Bike is rolling down the racetrack. His body is wrapped around the bike, and then it explodes. So the bike explodes. The guy gets incinerated. Girlfriend looks away, and then fade to black. End of movie.
Oh, man.
So one was, you know, written by a, you know, a screenwriter who understands what an audience wants at the end of the movie, and the other was written by a 10-year-old.
Or the human centipede. I don't know, because it was like, I mean, because the majority of this movie is just kind of, you know, your general corny, I can do it. I can race my bike and win, you know? And then all of a sudden it turns into Faces of Death.
Wow. Was it based on a true story or something?
I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, the movie's called Silver Dream Racer. You know, let's be honest, and it ends up with this guy dying in inferno, fade to black, the end, nothing. Like, not even like, you know, hanging around this, you know, the girlfriend and the best friend at the cemetery saying, you know, good job, man, and laying like the wreath at his, you know, at his tombstone and walking off. No, it's like it fades out on his fiery corpse. I've really never seen anything like it before.
it really makes you wonder how many other movies go horribly wrong after the final shot.
I know. I think it was an Australian movie. It was like Australian or something. Or they cut it off. So for the American release, they cut it off. I mean, it's just a completely different experience without it, you know? That was something for sure. So Silver Dream Racer. You know, you should definitely rent that with, like, your girlfriend or something and say, I got this fun racing movie. Let's watch this. And then just
feel like, good movie.
Yes, watch the tears flow at the end.
So do you think, you know, end of E.T., E.T. gets on the ship, Elliot, you know, right. Touch, you know, yeah. I'll be right here, gets the spaceship flies off, cuts to black, spaceship, you know, go back to the scene, spaceship goes a little bit further, gets hit by a meteor.
Yeah.
It explodes. E.T. flaming E.T. corpses falling from the sky. You know, one falls, crushes Gertie. That kind of thing.
That is, you know, maybe NASA is mad at letting the alien get away from it, fire an ICBM at it and dig it out.
They had those in the 80s, too.
It makes me question. You know, any happy ending. You just can't trust them, I think. So, yeah, just like this nihilistic ending, and they just draw this out. It's all slow motion, everyone looking on in horror, you know. Oh man. So Silver Dream Racer reviews coming very soon. All right, Mac, why don't you take us to our next phase here?
Okay, we're gonna take a look at what's coming out next week on DVD and Blu-ray. Gonna go to dvdverdict.com. We're gonna click on the upcoming DVD releases tab, and from there we're gonna go to the cover art gallery for November 23rd. Now, this being the big week before Thanksgiving, you'd think that, you know, there'd be a lot of major releases, but I'm not seeing a lot of big stuff here from Hollywood. Although, if you've ever wanted to learn to play ukulele,
that's right.
Your business with the complete ukulele and complete ukulele for kids.
Yeah. Hey, and look at the guy in the corner. He would have filled nicely in for the big head ambush topic we had last
week. That's right.
Freakish ukulele teacher with giant head.
We do that. That
the Expendables, right?
Is that this week?
Oh, I don't know. I don't see a Blu-ray release. I can't tell when these.
I'm pretty sure it comes out the 23rd.
Okay.
I saw that at Walmart today.
Very nice.
We got the big Criterion set, the America Lost and Found. And it's got, like, how many movies in it? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 movies, including Easy Rider, 5 Easy Pieces, Last Picture Show, King of Marvin Gardens. See, I mean, it's no Expendables.
No. I'll give you that, actually, and it's no Fire and Ice, The Dragon Chronicles, a movie that I just watched, and we'll have a review up pretty soon.
Oh, really?
Yes. So tell me what about this description attracts you? Okay, let's see. Straight to DVD dragon fantasy movie starring Amy Acker from the show Angel, directed by the director of Catwoman. Is that nothing? No, nothing. Okay.
Yeah. Well, you had me up until Catwoman.
Oh, yeah.
Although straight to DVD was a red flag.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
So is this at all like Pokemon? Because it looks like it is from the cover.
It feels like it, for sure.
Pokemon.
Wasn't there an 80s barbarian fantasy movie called Fire and Ice or something?
Yeah,
like,
it's the animated Fire and Ice.
Animated, yeah. It was like
rated R
or something.
Good, actually, yeah. But I'm going to guess that it's better than this.
Yeah, probably.
I'm going to give the award for kind of laziest softcore porn title to Desirable Teacher 2. I mean, come on. Can't try a little bit harder?
Because there were so many
unanswered questions. Class.
First Desirable Teacher.
I know. Or, homework.
That's good.
No, that's not very good. Don't patronize me, Dave. I don't deserve your patronage.
Oh, man, it's so close. I see these four film releases, and like I see these Van Damme movies or these two film packs, like the Rambo movies. But, where is Sudden Death? Where is it? So close.
Well, since Criterion got the rights, I think they're probably holding off for their big release later this year.
Yeah, that's going to be the four-disc set, is it?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Hey, there's Silver Dream Racer. Right there next to Sinner. And actually, a couple rows down is another movie I reviewed that came right along with Silver Dream Racer called Super Spook. And yikes. it's kind of 70s black exploitation. Kind of a comedy, but it's probably got the most racist theme song ever. That's all I'll say about that.
Boy, this is one that I hesitate to point out because I know that somehow I'll end up reviewing it.
Yeah, well,
the latest in the abominable line of buddies movies. It looks like the Santa Paws. Is that a guessing? That's a buddies movie. If not,
so it's the spinoff from the buddies movies.
Last thing that series needs is a spinoff.
I mean, they're like four deep in the spinoffs already, aren't they?
It's ridiculous. Oh, so terrible.
Now, have you ever heard of this band, White Lion? I've heard of White Snake, but White Lion, right at the bottom there, the concert anthology. So they've been around long enough to have a concert anthology. Ever heard of these guys?
I think that when I graduated from high school, we may have all walked out to a White Lion song.
Sweet. Actually, it's only 4 years, actually. So maybe they weren't around that long.
That's possible. I remember that there's a great deal of political back and forth, Dave. I don't know if you remember high school, but there's a lot at stake in choosing the song we'd all walk out to.
That's right.
Graduation, and so there were like two major camps, and I can't remember what songs we were kind of each fighting for, but somehow in the end, we canceled each other out, and like one guy who wanted a White Lion song won out, and so we all walked out to some White Lion song that I can't remember.
Ah, and this is a true story.
This is a true story. I didn't make that up. That's actually true.
Ah, nice.
It's not even just based on a true story.
It's not one of those inspired by a true story.
No.
All right. My vote for most skull-numbingly boring DVD release of the week has to be Steam Dreams. Titans of Steam. A Feast of Steam. double pack. There you go.
That steam is in steam engine, not anything steamy.
It's not steamy. Wow, the situation workout. Holy cow.
I need a name that's just a thing.
That's right. That's something.
You know? That's something. Yeah.
The scenario?
That's pretty good. Pretty good. Now, how about just the thing?
The thing.
I'm sure Marvel would sue me for that.
Yes.
Right?
And John Carpenter, right?
John Carpenter, yeah.
You can't trademark the word thing, I'm guessing, right?
My vote for most subtle release this week, I Spit on Your Naked Corpse, followed by Lesbian Vampires.
Yeah. And there's Naked Horrors on there as well. Just in time for Thanksgiving.
Yes.
Yeah, for Thanksgiving, there's an awful lot of... nudity and violence yes. and mixed together. There's a lot of, you know.
Well, Sleazy Sonic DVD release of the week. Eric.
I'm going to go with 2010 Moby Dick.
Wow, that's good. What could 2010 mean? Is it like
I don't know.
Measurements of some kind?
Yeah, Dave, you don't want to know.
All right, Mac.
The Whole Train.
That's very well
said. That's good.
You go with Stiff.
Yeah, good.
I should probably have to choose from. How about, what do you make a Red Hot Zorro there? Okay. All right, moving on to our ambush topics, and this is the final phase of the Friday Filibuster. We'll toss some random discussion topics at each other and see what sticks. So I'll kick it off. Why not? The topic for this week is wealthy a-holes.
I'm going to go with Michael Caine in Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
Oh, good. You know, movie I saw for the first time like a month or two ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's just one of those, you know, just never got around to seeing it. My wife loves it. So we finally, I think, I can't remember, that it was either an on-demand or Netflix thing too. I can't remember what, but finally got around to seeing it.
But I actually saw that in the theaters. I'm not sure how. Actually, yeah, that's a, you know, that's a good movie. I mean, it's a movie where all the protagonists are all a-holes, but
right.
It's he's a wealthy one.
Sure, some excellent Steve Martin mugging, you know, very
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, definitely.
Not very probably not very politically correct these days, right? Doesn't he? But the gentleman with an intellectual disability, I believe, he pretends. Yeah.
Rubric? Is that his name?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, but that brother.
All right, Mac?
Oh, boy, let me think. I don't know. I'm trying to remember my James Bond villains, because pretty much any one of them, I think.
That's true.
How about the guy from the villain from Casino Royale? He's a good one.
Yeah, he's good. Definitely.
Yeah, he was a real a-hole with the, you know, sitting across from Bond at the poker table there, sneering at him.
Except though, Mac, they might take issue with you because he was actually broke, right? He was playing that game because he lost like $100 million or something, right? Because he was at the time he wasn't very wealthy.
I missed that plot point.
Too bad. Huh? All right.
He's still in the fancy pants casino.
That's right. He's got a yacht, so we'll give that to him. So I think probably the wealthiest a-hole in the James, like the guy with the most disposable income, you know, had to be Hugo Drax from Moonraker.
Oh, yes.
To cook up that plot, I mean, just the investment capital alone, you know, to get that going. You know, he had a space station, and he was building shuttles and breeding.
Did he have to pay insurance on any of that?
I don't know. I mean, he had to hire a goon squad. He had like a secret Amazon headquarters. Yeah. That guy just did not. It must have been new money. He didn't know what to do with it. You know?
If I was going to build my own space shuttle and my own space station, I'd want better guys than goons building it.
Let's see. My submission is actually not similar to Eric's, but it's a beloved 80s comedy, and it's the Duke Brothers from Trading Places.
Oh, man.
Yeah, one of my favorite – well, actually, one of my favorite comedies. Not PC at all. I mean, doesn't Dan Aykroyd show up in blackface in the subway? So, again, not very PC at all. But you know, very funny. And those guys were premium a-holes. They destroyed Dan Aykroyd and, you know, their characters' lives over a bet for a dollar. So, and they wanted to corner the orange juice market. But
– yes. Frozen concentrated oranges.
Concentrated oranges, yes.
You know, I'm kind of embarrassed to admit, I don't think I've ever seen that all the way through.
Yeah, that's, you know, that's one of those things that's on a lot, so you could probably turn the TV on right now and find it. So. We actually watched this in our economics class in high school.
Really?
He showed it to us,
wow.
Yeah, so, and it, you know, it's R-rated, and there's a lot of swearing. He left all that in, but he cut out the topless Jamie Lee Curtis scenes.
Oh.
Did
he leave in the gorilla sex?
I believe so. Not very subtle there. Not very subtle at all.
It sounds like you learned a lot in high school.
So much. So much. All right, Mac, what do you got?
Okay. Well, if you went to the comic book store this week, you saw that DC just like flooded the market with Batman titles. There was like 10 major Batman-related comics came out this week. So there's a good excuse as any for another round of Batman Versus here on the Friday Filibuster. Mm-hmm. So imagine, a battle to the death between Batman versus Aragorn from Lord of the Rings. Who wins it?
Okay, Batman versus Aragorn? I can't see Aragorn really doing much against the grappling hooks and the batarangs. I mean, he's got pretty good hand-eye coordination. He knocked that knife out of the air in Fellowship of the Ring, you know, that the orc threw at his head. So that wasn't bad, but yeah, I think Batman would just sneak up on him and, you know, gas him or something. So
that's true. Aragorn's not much with the stealth, is he?
Yeah. So it'd be a good hand-to-hand fight, I think. So Aragorn without his blade, who knows?
Mac, I'm going to ask a question. Clarification, if I may. Did you say fight to the death?
I don't know.
Did you say fight to the death? Can we get a playback on that?
I believe so. Why?
Because I'm going to go with Aragorn because Batman can't kill anybody.
Oh, well played.
All right.
That's true.
You got lawyered.
Nice.
But in terms of skill level, though.
How about fight to the gagged and handcuffed outside of police headquarters?
Oh, okay, then that man.
Okay.
I have a delivery for you, Commissioner.
Yeah, Commissioner Gordon, here you go. What? Why is he singing in Elvish? All right. Did you have another?
I was just thinking that, Batman's got all the cool gadgets. He's got all these cool skills. He's got his ninja training and so on. But the thing is, Aragorn, he has his destiny, right? He's destined to become king someday. So you can't, like, I guess I was going for the kill, too, because I was thinking that you can't kill him because he has to fulfill his destiny.
This sounds like a setup. I think this is a setup ambushed epic because you knew about all this destiny stuff. You know?
Wait, you guys saw the movie, too.
Destiny.
That's true. You play the destiny card. so no matter what Batman does, he can't do anything because the destiny.
Yeah, because, Aragorn, he's the chosen one. He has a destiny. Is Batman the chosen one? I don't recall anything in his mythology saying that he's the chosen one.
Can't they just – they should combine forces and make their own movie, like Batman Return of the King.
That's good.
There you go.
Batman Return of the King.
And the villains can be the Penguin, Catwoman, and Sauron.
They team up like in Batman the movie and they
– Exactly.
Get in a submarine and they they send their orcs and idiot goons. Yeah, that'd be good.
Yeah, and Gollum.
That'd be a good shot. Lord of the Rings Batman crossover. Now you're talking. That's not bad. Yeah. All right. Any other matchups, or is that the matchup of the week?
That's the matchup of the week, yeah.
All right. Very good. Eric, finish it off.
All right. Quintessentially 80s moment from an 80s TV show.
I'm trying to think if there are any very special Deadly Refrigerator episodes. Different
yes,
strokes.
It was.
I can think of one off the top
of my head.
I know
one. Yeah,
we got a Deadly Refrigerator episode. Oh, man. So much I'm thinking of. Well, a couple spring to mind from 21 Jump Street. That was a very issue-driven show, they always tackled issues. One was a very special AIDS show, where everyone wasn't sure. A kid had AIDS in school, and everyone was very terrified of that, wondering, am I getting AIDS if I, touch a glass of milk that he touched or something. So it's up to the Jump Street crew to dispel those rumors. Also, in season 5, our hero goes undercover, and this is part of our triumvirate of 80s nemesis, and he goes undercover with some Satanists. And it's actually a scene where he makes love to the head Satan worshiper on her altar or something.
Wow.
This is 21 Jump Street?
21 Jump Street. No, yeah, season 5 when Michael Bendetti took over for Johnny Depp. So he was battling Satanists.
Man, I knew Fox was out there, but alter sex, really?
I believe so.
Satanic alter sex.
I believe Fox. It was satanic alter sex. Yeah, I don't have that season.
Was the show still on at Sunday at 7 o'clock at that time?
I don't know. Probably Sunday at 2 a.m. Yeah.
It's coming home from an evening church service. Flip on Fox. See one of the Jump Street Boys jumping in on an altar.
That's right. Yeah. So Satanists and AIDS, and there was There's a bullying episode where the guy bought a cheap gun to try to shoot a bully, and it blew up in his hand. So we learned about handgun safety and all that. So really, a lot of stuff.
I remember the AIDS episode very well. Yeah. It's like Johnny Depp was the only one who would sit by him in the cafeteria.
That's right. That's right. All right.
Well, Eric, are you going to take the refrigerator one, or should I take
no,
it?
No. Please.
All Maybe right. there's well, more than one.
Well, the one I'm remembering is, of course, Punky Brewster.
Ah, okay, really?
Oh, yeah. He cleaned the refrigerator had been left in some junkyard somewhere, and there was a danger of, you know, getting locked inside of it. It's very frightening and very topical. The drug episode of Punky Brewster is very memorable as well, where the mean girl, the bad girl, was trying to convince Punky to experiment with drugs. And there's a scene where, you know, they have the reveal, and she holds out her hand, and the drugs are in her hand. They do this close up of this little girl's hand, and, like, every drug you could ever think of, it's like perfectly placed in her hand, like perfectly positioned.
Yes, like all the pill tablets, right? You know, all right. That stuff.
I mean, to be fair to the mean girl, you take one look at Punky, you know, Brewster's wardrobe, and you assume she's on. I mean, you assume, you know, maybe she has a little bit of experience with the uppers and the downers and the bennies and the yellow jackets and the buzz bombers and the alter sexes and all that kind of stuff. I mean, you just assume she knows all this stuff.
Nice. All right. What was yours?
Okay. Well, I'd like to follow up Max by saying you could probably pick pretty much any episode from Punky Brewster and it would have been a quintessentially 80s thing.
Right.
But mine was from Different Strokes. The episode with Mr. T, where at one point Arnold dresses up as a mini Mr. T. It's about I guess that kind of coupled with the Nancy Reagan appearance on Different Strokes. It's about as 80s as you can get.
Yeah, too bad they weren't on together. Yeah,
that'd be good.
If they were the same episode, then they could have spun them off where into their own show where they solve mysteries together.
Nancy Reagan and Mr. T.
Right.
Mr. T was already. Well, I guess the A-Team didn't really solve mysteries, did they?
Nah. They finished them.
if only they'd added that angle, you know?
It wasn't really a procedural.
That's too bad. I'll have to see, Murdoch puzzle it out.
Back to Life had a lot of quintessential stuff. Another issues-driven show, and I've seen 2 seasons of that already, but, you know, certainly there's a very special illiteracy episode. You know,
was there? I remember the anorexia episode.
Oh, I didn't get to that one. Don't ruin it for me.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, man. Well, that's a topic. This is a topic that could probably dominate like for another hour or so. So well played. All right. Well, that is it for this edition of the Friday Filibuster. We are at the finale. So thank you for bearing with us. Again, we will tease our upcoming Firestorm Roundtable commentary, which should be a good time. But that'll be in the near future. So as now, we just thanks to Eric and Mac for kicking it. And Friday Filibuster at DVDVerdict.com is the email. Facebook.com/Friday Filibuster is the Facebook page. And go to DVDVerdict for all of your entertainment-related news. And stay tuned for some exciting changes to the world of DVDVerdict, which if you've listened to the show, Michael has talked about before. Mike Staley has talked about before. But I believe we are at the cusp of big changes. So stay tuned to that. Mac, what do you got to say?
K-O.